one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we have got a big guest for you here on this episode of the podcast. The greatest third baseman in baseball history, the greatest Philadelphia Phillies player in history, Michael Jack Schmidt, joining the show here this week. We're going to talk to him about an awareness campaign that he has launched regarding melanoma and youth sports, but also we're going to get his thoughts on the early season Phillies. We'll get his thoughts on changing a manager at the beginning of the season. And I also wanted to get his thoughts on the current playoff structure and what we might be looking at in terms of a labor stoppage at the end of this season. So we're going to talk to Mike Schmidt about all of that stuff coming up here in just a couple of minutes. But first, a couple more quick thoughts as we are now this Rob Thomson situation. The firing of Rob Thomson is more in the rearview mirror. The Phillies have played their first game of the Don Mattingly era. And in Don's first game as manager, the Phillies win 7-0. They play perhaps their most complete game of the season. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it was all coincidence or that there was no coincidence. But one of the things that you were hoping that a move like this would make for to let go a man who didn't deserve to get fired, but something had to change, and this seemed like the most likely outcome, was that it would shake the team up. It would shake the players up, focus them in a little bit more, and at least for one night, on Tuesday night, it seemed to do just that. For the first time, a Phillies starting pitcher pitches into the seventh inning, and Jesus Luzardo pitched 7 shutout innings in this game for his best start of the season. He has been so up and down, but really one of the snake-bitten Philly starters here so far on the season, and he was absolutely fantastic against a Giants lineup that struggles to put runs on the board. Nevertheless, his stuff looked incredible. And Trey Turner, who has been really struggling atop the lineup, had his first four-hit game of the season. Alec Bohm also hit a ringing two-run double in this one as the Phillies pulled away in the middle innings. So this one was never really a contest. And the Phillies hand Don Mattingly a very easy 7-0 win. Now 1-0 as a manager for the Philadelphia Phillies. And as the game on Wednesday was rained out, it'll be made up as part of a split doubleheader on Thursday. If you're wondering what we're supposed to see differently about Don Mattingly, I don't know that there's going to be a whole lot. He says that he's a lot like Rob Thomson, but there are going to be some things that are done a little bit differently, he said. He talked to the media ahead of Wednesday's what turned out to be canceled game against our postponed game at Citizens Bank Park. He indicated specifically that Brandon Marsh has worked himself into an everyday role with the Phillies. So I don't believe you're going to be seeing a whole lot of platooning with Brandon Marsh in left field. He believes Marsh probably has earned the right to play every day. So we won't see as much Felix Reyes. And I don't know that we're going to be necessarily looking for another right-handed bat necessarily to hit against left-handers. I did see that Randall Grichuk was released this week. He has not played well this year, but has swung it a little bit better over the last week. But he has historically mashed left-handed hitting. I would not be at all surprised to see the Phillies put in a waiver claim. And given the fact they have one of the worst records in baseball, they would be among the first in line to get him if they decided to do that. The Phillies were out doing bunt-specific drills in the middle of batting practice on Wednesday. That is something you did not see a whole lot with Rob Thomson. And Don Mattingly said he and the coaching staff want to mix in more bunting, more pitchers fielding practice, and fundamental drills more semi-regularly, Don Mattingly said, than they were already doing. And this is part of when you've got a veteran team, you probably get some pushback on that. And Rob Thomson, I would assume, thought that the team didn't really need a whole lot more of that. As we watch this team play, you kind of got the sense that maybe these guys, their fundamentals weren't so great, that they weren't so hot. And that's, again, the difficulty of having Rob Thomson as the manager. He'd been here for so long. He'd established this system, this way of doing things. And once you establish something like that, it's hard to come back from it. And I, again, this is just my speculation as I watch from the outside and see what's happening here. But when you bring in a new voice, like Don Mattingly, you have the opportunity then to change some things. You have the opportunity to do some different kinds of things. A new manager means a new voice, means a new way of doing things. And you're either going to have to be on board as a player or you're not on board. But Don Mattingly also has something that Rob Thompson didn't have. And I've never put much stock into this. I certainly didn't put much stock into it when Nick Castellanos was talking about it this offseason. But he is a former player. And not only that, a former great player who has become a very good manager. He's learned how to take what he did, what came naturally to him as a player, as one of the greatest hitters of the mid to late 1980s into the 1990s, as a phenomenal hitter, and has been able to take all of those things that he learned from his time in the majors, and he's become a pretty good manager. Again, we don't know how this is all going to play out. There's still lots of games to go. We'll see how he manages his bullpen. I did think that we saw on Tuesday that even as Jesus Luzardo was cruising in that game, in the eighth and ninth innings, he had more relievers ready to go than Rob Thompson had. Right? Of course, Thompson in the game on Friday night against the Braves didn't have Kyle Backus or another left-hander up in time to face Michael Harris. And Andrew Painter got hit for a two-run double in that situation that really hurt the team. I think Don Mattingly was a little bit more proactive, at least in the first game on Tuesday night, in terms of making sure that he had relievers ready to go. Now, you can go too far with that, too. You can burn out a bullpen, which we saw Joe Girardi do on numerous occasions. So there's a balancing act to that. But a lot of people are asking, with Don Mattingly here, Don Mattingly has taken over the team. Don Mattingly is going to do things a little bit differently. But, you know, have the Phillies dug themselves too big of a hole? 10 games under 500 with 134 games to go when Don Mattingly came aboard. And now they're 9 games under 500 after the win on Tuesday. Jason Stark in The Athletic took a look back at Don Mattingly's managerial history. And he noticed and he found that twice before with the Los Angeles Dodgers, Don Mattingly did exactly what he needs to do here in Philadelphia this season. Bring his team back from a huge deficit to win the division. Two seasons in a row, in 2013 and 2014, according to this article from Jason Stark, his Dodgers were having trouble in June. Not April, not May, in June. They were 9.5 games out of first place in 2013, 10 games out of first place in 2014, in June. Both of those teams went on to win the division. In Jason's article, he notes that Baseball Reference said that only one manager in history has brought his team back from 9.5 games behind or worse to finish first two seasons in a row, and that is Don Mattingly. Only two managers have done it twice in their entire managerial careers: Bobby Cox for the 1991 and 93 Braves, and Sparky Anderson with the 1973 Reds and the 1987 Tigers. And so you have the Phillies here, 10.5 games out of first and 10 games under 500 when Don Mattingly takes over in late April. It's not even May yet. Don Mattingly has done this before. Matter of fact, his job was in jeopardy in at least that first situation, but certainly the second situation. After their first 72 games, the Dodgers were 30-42. 30-42 in 2013. Through 72 games, that's almost half a season, and they were 12 games under 500. And as Jason Stark noted, they went 27-6 in their next 33 games. They went 42-8 in their next 50, and then 46-10 in their next 56, 53-13 in their next 66 games, and won the division by 11 games. In 2014, they were only one game over 500 on June 7th, and then they went 25 games over 500 the rest of the way. They won 94 games and won the division by 6 games. Now, Don Mattingly was leading those teams, of course, but you also had some players go on a crazy rampage in those seasons. The article notes Hanley Ramirez got super hot. He had a 341, 398, 628 slash line from June on. Can we see a Phillies hitter get that hot? Yasiel Puig came up to make his major league debut in 2013, and remember how great he was when he first came up. You had Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke both at the top of their game. Now, I could easily see this starting rotation going on a run. But if you're going to tell me that, you know, some of these offensive players are going to go on those kinds of runs, I'm just not sure. I'm just not sure. But this is the message Don Mattingly is telling the players right now. I've done this before. I have turned teams around. I have made this happen. And with, you know, obviously he's not an egotistical guy by all reports. He's actually an extremely humble guy. So when he says that, he's not necessarily saying it was me, I did it. Obviously his players had a lot to do with it. That being said, he knows how to do it. He knows how to approach a team and to get them to come over these humps like this. So Don Mattingly was not Dave Dombrowski's first choice to replace Rob Thomson. Alex Cora was, but maybe Don Mattingly is the voice the team needs right now. We only have one game. That is the smallest sample size one can possibly have when making a decision about something, but we will see how this all pans out as the schedule lightens up quite a bit here over the next couple of weeks. One other thing before we get to our conversation with Mike Schmidt. I wrote an article in The Good Fight on Wednesday talking about the process behind the firing of Rob Thomson. And the more I sit here and I chew on it, as more information came out after Justin and Liz and I recorded our podcast, our emergency podcast on Tuesday, we started to understand the timing of everything that happened with Alex Cora and with Don Mattingly and when this all was happening. We speculated on the Tuesday podcast that Dave Dombrowski, we were trying to figure out, did he go to Alex Cora before firing Rob Thomson? Did he fire Rob Thomson thinking he could get Alex Cora? And then, oh no, I've already fired my manager. Now I've got to actually go to Don Mattingly or whatever. So neither situation would have been great. Okay. Either the way it worked out was Alex, and this is all fantastic reporting by Matt Gelb in The Athletic. Alex Cora spoke to Dave Dombrowski on Saturday. Before the rest of the world knew that Alex Cora had been fired, he and his coaching staff had been notified. He calls Dave Dombrowski right away, and they're talking because these two are very close, right? So they had continued to have conversations on Saturday, continue to have conversations on Sunday. It apparently becomes intense. Dave Dombrowski is really pushing for Alex Cora to come to Philadelphia as the team's new manager. Here's the thing. Rob Thomson is still the manager of this team. Dave Dombrowski is calling Alex Cora and trying to get him to be the manager of a team that he still has a manager for. And during the course of that weekend in Atlanta, Dave Dombrowski had summoned three of his top scouts to watch the team and give feedback. And he's doing that with Rob Thomson. They deliver the feedback to Rob Thomson in his office on Sunday as he's also trying to court Alex Cora to come to Philadelphia. Now, ultimately, Alex Cora, as we talked about on the emergency podcast, turned Dave Dombrowski down. Yet someone else turning the Phillies down for something, right? Bo Bichette, and now Alex Cora turning the Phillies down. And so Dave Dombrowski decides he still does want to go through with firing Rob Thomson. And on Tuesday morning, he calls Rob into his office. He offers the job to Don Mattingly on Monday, says, this is the change we're going to make. We'd like to make you the manager. Don Mattingly talks about how he wants to make have the coaching staff look. Dusty Wathan will be his bench coach, and they're going to call up the AAA manager to be the third base coach to replace Dusty Wathan. And Don Mattingly becomes the next manager. He agrees to become the next manager on Monday. They call Rob Thomson in on Tuesday morning at 8:30. And let him know what they have decided. And to his credit, Rob Thomson said he was okay with Dombrowski talking to Alex Cora before he was fired. He said, I don't really think too much of it. He told reporters, I think Dave's just doing his due diligence. He had made up his mind and he was going to move forward. He called Dave Dombrowski a Hall of Fame executive and said, so I think people need to trust him. He's going to do the right thing for the organization. Dave and I have a close relationship, but that doesn't stand in the way of him doing the right thing to the organization. I respect that. Rob Thomson's telling reporters this in a Zoom call hours after he was fired. Managers don't talk to the media after they've been fired like this. It just made you feel, if you came away from all of this with like a little pit in your stomach thinking like, oh man, this wasn't great. I'm with you on that. You know, I understand the reasoning behind replacing Rob Thomson. I think, like I said on the podcast on Tuesday, I think Dave Dombrowski was concerned if they didn't do it now, they risked falling into a deeper hole that they would not be able to get out of. But as a result, this does just feel, it feels kind of messy. It feels kind of icky the way it was all handled. I don't like the process. I don't like the way that it all went down. And it does sound like, for all the world, Alex Cora is going to be this team's manager in 2027. Once the lockout is over, it sounds like that is absolutely going to be what happened. But I wrote about this for The Good Fight. I would encourage you all to check that out when you get a chance. Well, I'm thrilled to be joined by Hall of Fame third baseman, the greatest Philadelphia Philly in franchise history, and just to be candid, my personal hero growing up as a fan of the Phillies in the mid to late 1980s. Mike Schmidt is joining me here on Hittin' Season, and he's joining me to talk about a campaign that he is taking on right now. I'm talking to young athletes about melanoma and the importance of fighting against skin cancer, something that Mike knows a lot about personally. Mike, thank you for coming on Hittin' Season. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I caught a little virus last night, so if my voice is a little, a little weird, that's why. As far as my initiative, let me take you back to the beginning and give you a little backstory on this thing. In 2013, I was diagnosed with stage 3. Melanoma with a mole on my back, and it had metastasized and got into my lymph system, into my lungs, into my brain. It started an entire new life for me and my family, of course. Chemotherapy, radiation, that whole process probably went for about 3 years. I'm still taking a lot of meds, still getting CT scans, brain MRIs, still have to stay on top of that because, once it gets to the point it was with me, there's, no telling, you can't say that it won't come back. I mean, cancer's an awful thing. And so I joined a foundation called the Richard David Kahn Melanoma Foundation down in my area down here. And it gave me a chance to tell my story, to give back and talk to kids and adults about the dangers of the sun's rays, try to convince kids and adults that they need to wear protection when they're out. We were doing it pretty strong for like 2 or 3 years. And then we decided to bring it up to Philadelphia. And I started a 501c3, the Mike Schmidt Initiative in Philadelphia. We've got great guns up here. This particular offseason, we've got a relationship with the Hall of Fame. We've got a relationship, I don't know whether you've heard of it, with Cobbs Creek Restoration, the Tiger Woods Learning Lab. Let's see. We always have a relationship with the Phillies. We just partnered with Dermatology Partners, and they're in 3 states. They have 70 employees. So many great things are happening with us now, and I'm getting an opportunity to tell my story and hopefully affect as many people as we can. Our mission is stop skin cancer, and that's what we're trying to do.
And I know you held some events over the course of the last week in Ridley and in Doylestown, and really just kind of stressing this. I mean, I guess it's as much to the parents as to the kids, because the kids are going to go out and they're going to play in the sun, and they're not thinking about the long-term effects of playing on a hot field 3 hours, 4 hours at a time, and they're young, and so they're not really thinking about that. So the parents are the ones who really need to have this hammered home to protect their kids when they're out in the sun like that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I do my best when I'm standing in front of a bunch of little leaguers and they're 8 to 12 years old, and try to tell them how important using sunscreen is. But I want their always want their parents to be right behind them to convince the parents that, they need to change their ways about the sun. They need to make sure the kids put sunscreen on. They need to make sure the kids maybe carry sunscreen in their equipment bags. Show them how to put it on. Maybe wear a couple of sleeves on their arms. A lot of major league players are wearing sleeves now. Professional golfers as well. Just a newfound respect for the sun.
Yeah, and you said in your playing days, you guys didn't wear sunscreen, right? I mean, that was very rare for you guys when you guys were playing in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
Not at all. I spent my whole life in the sun. No sunscreen. I didn't care. I had baby oil,
Yeah.
I thought I could get a tan, and that, I destroyed my skin.
It's hard to believe people used to use suntan lotion, right? They used to use lotion that would actually help you accentuate getting ultraviolet rays. And it's great that we live in an era now where we are more aware of that. And so, what do you have coming up on the horizon, say this summer, as you continue this push?
Well, we have several events planned. We have a June 18th. We have a big party at the vet for our gold sponsors. We're playing the Mets that night, so we're doing a special thing for our gold sponsors. We are planning a golf tournament at Cobbs Creek on September 21st. I do, with the Phillies, I mean, I do when I go up every month for 4 days. I mean, this is, I mean, if I'm there for 4 days, I may do a couple of events for my initiative, but most of the time I work for the Phillies. I mean, obviously they're my way up there. You know, you got in mind. So it's busy when I go up. It's very busy.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck and continued awareness with kids on this. It's a tremendous thing you're doing and really important. One of those things that just doesn't get thought about a whole lot. I did want to ask you a couple of questions about the Phils here as we're doing this interview here on the Monday, in between the Atlanta series and the Giants series. The Phillies are obviously really struggling right now. You've been calling games for the team up until like the last year or so. So I know you probably have your finger on the pulse of what's been going on. You can see by the way they're playing in the record that it has gotten off to a terrible start right now. What do you think is happening? I mean, without being obviously in the clubhouse right now, but having played for so long and been a part of teams that have gotten off to slow starts before, what is happening right now with the players in the clubhouse? How are they dealing with this?
For sure, they know. They know what's going on. The media doesn't need to tell them. I know they feel awful. I looked at the box score the other day with the batting averages going up and down the box score, and they were horrendous actually. That will all change over time. A month and a half from now, things will change. They can't continue to lose at this rate. They just can't. They'll start winning 2 out of 3, 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4. And the confidence will come back. The players will start to feel it. They'll start to feel it. Got to get rid of that sense that, God, I hope we just, focusing on how many they've lost in a row, and you start thinking, God, I hope we don't lose another one. Or, you think more about having fun. That's another thing that's hard to do when you're losing like that. It's not necessarily fun to go out and play. It's hard to describe. People would say, well, they're paying you $25 million a year, you ought to have fun, right?
It's not, it doesn't work that way. No.
So I don't know. It's just maybe none of them went to the park today. Maybe they just got baseball off of their mind. Maybe something will happen. Maybe they'll jump out to a 7 or 8 run lead. Something will happen to change this. They're just too good, and they got Wheeler back now. So you got Wheeler and Garcia, right?
Yeah, they have. Yeah, yep.
So, I mean, that's a 1-2 punch that, you just can't beat. I don't know. It's just play. I don't know how to put it in. I don't have any pat answers for you.
No, sure. No. Well, it's confounding because this isn't a bad team that came into the season with low expectations and has gotten off to such a rocky start, right? They've been to the playoffs 4 years in a row. They had World Series aspirations again this year. For a team this good to have such a terrible start, it's really hard to kind of comprehend, especially as fans. I mean, you look at the roster, you look at the payroll, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so now people are turning their attention to if changes are going to be made, you can't remake a roster here at the end of April. But what you can do is you can let some coaches go. You can let the manager go. as someone who has who was on teams that saw managerial changes, I know one of the most well-known, of course, is in 1979 when Danny Ozark was fired and Dallas Green was brought in. There's a lot of fans that continue to look at that example and say, that's what we need. That's what we've got to have. You know, Rob Thompson's too nice with the players. They need somebody to come in who's a little bit more brusque or whatever. Obviously, that was a one-time thing with you guys in 1980, right? That doesn't usually work that way. But what are your thoughts on a managerial change in the middle of the season like this?
Don't forget, there was an addition of Pete Rose.
Yeah.
Back then as well. I mean, Pete just won't lose. I mean, I don't know how to describe that. He just keeps the team loose in the clubhouse and very verbal. He does things on the field that light a fire under everybody around him. I mean, that may sound crazy, but I just the level of my game went up tremendously around Pete. And I never think letting the manager go. I think letting the manager coaches go is an embarrassing thing to the players. It's just, you know, they feel bad. And Rob, I think Rob is a fantastic manager. I don't know what the answer is. You got to win one, then you got to win two in a row. Then you win that third one in a row. Maybe you lose one, then you win two in a row again. Before you know it, you're creeping back. You can feel yourself creeping back to 500. Yeah. And then boom, you know, next thing you know, you're two or three games over and it's a whole new lease on life.
Yeah.
But remember, you got to score more runs than the other team.
That's right. That's right. And right now, the Phillies, there's no team in baseball that has a wider gap between the runs they've given up and the runs that they've scored right now. And that won't stay that way all season, I'm sure. But one of the things that the Phillies have going for them is there's so many more playoff spots available now, right? I mean, you've got the three wild cards in each league in addition to the three division championships. So you've got six playoff teams in the National League every year. That is something that you did not have when you were playing. And I've always wanted to ask players who played in the era before the wild card round, when you see the way the playoff structure is set up now and you see the opportunities for a team like the Phillies, who maybe they really struggle in April and May, but then they catch fire over the last 4 months, teams can still make the postseason even when that has happened. Whereas when you were playing and you had to win the NL East in a six or a seven team division to get to the playoffs, if you had a terrible April and May, it really was almost impossible to win the division and come back. So do you wish you had all those wild cards now, or do you prefer it back in when you were playing that you really had to have a great regular season from start to finish to earn that playoff spot?
No, I wouldn't want to play the way they have it now. We had four, right?
Yeah.
Three divisions and the next best record. And we only played two rounds, you know, the NLCS,
yep,
and then the World Series. I would much prefer that, without question. Now, the way it is right now, I mean, the Phillies are still going to have to get the 90 wins.
Yeah.
Maybe 88. I don't know, but it depends on the National League East, you know. And there's some really good teams out in the West, right? San Diego, L.A., obviously. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who else is really doing well there, but you get too far behind the other teams, then it's hard to even grab one of those last playoff spots. So,
yeah,
can't worry about that. You just got to go grind every day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all five teams in the Central have records above 500 right now. So there is a hill to climb. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you about was, we are looking at the end of the season at a potential work stoppage, it would seem, because the collective bargaining agreement is up. And of course, at the center of this whole thing is going to be salary cap and salary floor. And with what the Dodgers payroll looks like and the Mets payroll looks like, and hey, even teams like the Phillies, who spend close to over $300 million when you factor in all of the luxury taxes they have to pay, there's a wide divide between the top and the bottom. And so I think more fans are growing to the idea of a salary cap, salary floor. I'm not one of them. I don't like the idea of a salary cap, salary floor. But I wonder if, as you see this game changing and evolving, and you see the payroll disparity, what is your sense about the likelihood of the Players Association having to cave this time around on a salary cap? Or do you think they'll hold strong?
I'd assume they'll hold strong. I mean, we did back in 76 when free agency was on the table. Players are entitled to make what they can make in a free market. So I'm assuming it'll be a rough offseason this year as a former player.
Yeah.
As a former player. So there's a lot of players that are doing pretty well every 15 days.
Yeah, that is no doubt true. Last thing for you, Mike, the All-Star game is at Citizens Bank Park this summer in Philadelphia. Are you going to be a part of that at all? Do you have any plans to be there or take part? Are there any ceremonies that you're involved in?
Yes, I don't have any specific information on that, but I will be going there Sunday through Wednesday. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I think I need to get my orders from John Middleton. He hadn't given them to me yet.
Okay, that's fair. Well, Mike, I wish you all the best with this campaign to educate the nation's youth and their parents about melanoma. Is there some place that people can go, someplace online or anything like that, if they want to get more information about that?
They can go to melanomafoundation.com, the website. All the information is there via QR code, how to donate. My history, my story, the story of how the foundation got started. Melanomafoundation.com. We'd appreciate everybody taking a look.
Well, Mike, it has been a pleasure and a thrill for me to talk to you. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on Hittin' Season.
Got it, John. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to encourage everyone. This interview that I just did with Mike Schmidt is going to be on the WHYY YouTube page. So again, if you're not subscribed to the WHYY YouTube page, you should do that. That way you get all of the Hittin' Season content that we're putting up there, and you can watch the interview in its entirety get a little bit more that way. Also, tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. Leave a 5-star rating and a review when you get a chance. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can feel free to do that. Please send us an email to the show, hittinseason@billypenn.com. We would love to hear from you. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.